In the broad strokes, our culture often likes to draw in. People will talk about there being sort of two prevailing sins people tend to fall in. And then, because we like to do this in America, especially in America, we tend to assign them genders. I don't think it's so much about gender as other things, but we'll get to that. We tend to assign to men the sin of pride. And we tend, in more recent times, we've figured out then if men fall into this sin of pride, perhaps the classic example of that is the failure to ask for directions. Yes, you know what that is about. Then women fall into the sin of the failure to flourish. Perhaps the classic example of that is at the holidays, when you bake the cookies and you wrap the presents, and everyone else is taken care of and you are exhausted. Remember how that goes? The house is clean. Everyone else is tucked away, and you're sitting there with your feet up, wondering, who's taking care of you? Yes. I don't think it's so much about gender. Because if you look at failure to flourish, or failure to thrive, it occurs other places. It occurs actually in two very distinct other groups, in infants and in the elderly. It's a medical diagnosis where it can actually become fatal, which is sad and tragic. But if you start to look at what all three groups have in common, you start to talk about groups that are, or historically have been, disadvantaged, that are powerless. And as the world evolves and you start to talk about pride, it starts to move out of sort of this men-only realm and into people who have power. You look at it on sort of a global, international level, it works nicely into sort of the haves and the have-nots. And it's easy for those of us who have power to begin to forget our limitations, which is really what pride is about. To forget what we can't or what we shouldn't do. And it's easy for those who don't have power to forget what they can do or what they should do, which is really what failure to flourish is about. It's about not realizing your potential. Which happens a lot in our world. I mention this because it's important to sort of have that in the back of your mind before we go back to Jeremiah. Of course, we're going back to Jeremiah this week. The end, or as much of the end of the story of the exiles as we get in Jeremiah. Remember the exiles? Last week we left them on the banks of the waters of Babylon weeping because they had been torn away from their homes and their lives, wondering how they would survive in this strange and alien land. And this week, the prophet Jeremiah, who has never been popular with us or with, you know, his own compatriots, has something to say to them. And it's not very popular either. He writes to the exiles who would like nothing more than perhaps a missive saying, start planning the rebellion, you can come home. Or be as troublesome as possible and maybe they'll kick you out. Something like that. But instead, he says, build homes, plant your gardens, marry, raise your children, make sure your children marry and have children, and that their children marry. Be whole where you are, be happy, invest in the city you are in. Find a way to worship God where you are. For your wholeness and your safety and your happiness are dependent on the wholeness and the safety and the happiness of the city you're in. I imagine the exiles getting the letter and reading it, expecting something insightful and prophetic, and reading something insightful and prophetic and going home still kind of depressed, because they don't know how to do that yet. Because what Jeremiah had told them was, of course, that they had to flourish. They had to find a way to realize their potential, where they were. Remember, these are the leaders of Israel. These are the people with great potential. And they just don't like where they are. They do, eventually. It's the end of the story, centuries later. And centuries later, when Cyrus comes through and frees everyone, says, oh, you Israelites can go home if you want to. Many of them don't. Many of them choose to stay. And the scriptures they translate become the scriptures that the early Christian church uses, because it is in Greek. And most of the early Christian world speaks Greek. And that is part of their legacy, because they chose to flourish where they were. But it was hard at first. Flourishing often is. It's a risky venture. We think pride is more difficult because our culture has spent more time pondering pride and trying to figure out limitations and what that means and how to struggle with that and figure out what you can't do and how to control these things. But to figure out how to flourish and become who you are is equally challenging, because it involves finding the potential you haven't realized and then putting it forward in the faith and the hope and the trust that no one is going to laugh at you over it. Which is scary and terrifying, because it's always something you're not good at yet. And the first time you do it, you walk away thinking, I just made a complete fool out of myself. And the challenge is to go back and make a complete fool out of yourself another dozen times, until you're not quite a complete fool. Until you start to realize that you're actually quite good at it and getting better at it. Until other people start to come to you and say, "How did you do that?" It is terrifying. I think the secret for the exiles is that there was more than one of them. They didn't do it alone. So that every time when they did something that was completely terrifying in this city that was completely new and completely strange, they could come back together and say, "Did we really do that? Was that really okay?" They could all look at each other and go, "Well, we're all still here. Okay, we can do that again." And together, they could sort out how to keep trying those things. When you are all alone, it is almost impossible to flourish. When you have a community of people, though, to come together with, who will say, "I will help you. I will support you. We'll show up," becomes possible to do those things that terrify you. Thank God we have one another. Amen.